Good morning and welcome to The Wolf Show, the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom. And I'm Tana Hartman, the host. My guest this morning is Molly Beecham. She's the Director of Development for Democracy North Carolina. And welcome, Molly.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Molly, start out by telling us a little bit of the history of Democracy North Carolina.
Democracy North Carolina is a campaign finance reform and voting rights group, nonprofit doing state-level work. Back in the early 90s, our executive director, Bob Hall, started, actually he had been doing money and politics research for a long time, but started actually getting significant funding, starting with the MacArthur Genius Grant that he received in 1992, and so we're very proud of that, of course. And since then, a lot of the successes that Democracy North Carolina and our allies have enjoyed are really due to the Z. Smith Reynolds Foundation. Without Z. Smith Reynolds, I don't think North Carolina would be nearly as far along in the important reforms that we're working on.
Among those reforms, the Judicial Campaign Reform Act was a big step for North Carolina. Well, actually for the country, because North Carolina is one of a few states that, sort of pioneered. Tell us about that.
Exactly right. In 2002, at the General Assembly, along with our allies, Common Cause, League of Women Voters, the Center for Voter Education, Democracy North Carolina helped win legislative changes that allowed for partial public campaign financing for state-level judges. What we noticed was a lot of money was flowing from attorneys into these judicial races, and that just doesn't instill public confidence in the judiciary system. So 2002 won the public campaign financing, enacted for the first time in 04 and implemented again in 06. The vast majority of candidates have used the program, and actually the vast majority plan to use it again in 2008 for those Supreme Court and appellate court races. So the state-level judges only. It was interesting, in 2006, some of the Superior Court judges' races were, you know, there was so much spending going on in those races. Folks were calling us and said, when are you going to get this for other levels? So we are always interested in expanding public campaign financing, and are tickled that in 2007, at the very end of the session, truly the 11th hour, at 11 o'clock one night, won public campaign financing for three council estate races. So this year, a pilot program, it passed the Senate late at night. Superintendent for Public Instruction, auditor, and the Commissioner of Insurance candidates this year will have the opportunity to opt into public campaign financing. And again, the majority of the candidates are opting to use the program. And, you know, other states enjoy public campaign financing options for their legislatures, and that's what, you know, we would like to see adopted for our General Assembly. We did float a bill in 2007 that would have provided for a pilot program for six legislative districts, House districts, to try public campaign financing. That bill didn't pass, but do expect to see us in 2009, and we'll need the help of the listeners to call the legislators. Of course, it's helpful that we now have Joe Hackney in, and he has long been a supporter of public campaign financing, and he's now the Speaker of the House. So all of you folks listening who are in Joe Hackney's district, please a nod of gratitude toward Representative Hackney.
They have to qualify for this. What does it take to qualify? Is it the same for the Council of State positions as for the...
Good question. So a lot of folks who don't like the idea of public campaign financing try to tell us that you'll get every, you know, different kind of crazy people showing up and trying to tap into these public funds. In reality, what happens, even folks who would like, qualified folks who want to participate, often have trouble getting the qualifying donations, because the donations that you can accept in the public campaign financing program are much smaller than they would be if you were just privately fundraising. So you have to agree to spending limits. You have to get a large number of small qualifying donations.
350, I think, isn't it?
Well, it's 750 donations for the for the Council of State.
Okay.
And that's somewhere between $30,000 and $120,000 in $120 for an uncontested primary. The rules are a little complicated.
Okay.
And
they,
I'm actually rounding these numbers off. For some reason, the numbers all end in 99, like at the dime store. somewhere between $30,000 and $240,000 in a contested race. The one I'm more familiar with and like to talk about is what happened in 2000. 6 with the Supreme Court race. So folks had to raise, if you're in an appellate race, you raise about $50,000, Supreme Court about $70,000, and then you are eligible for some public funds.
And again, and this is all small donations. You can't go out and get $1,000.
Exactly, exactly. The in those new council estate races, it's donations between $10 and $200, okay, with the exception being you can take $1,000 from certain family members, so close family members. And you can take a max of $30,000 from your party as well. Okay. So there are, you know, it's a well thought out program that, you know, we'll continue to tweak it. These kind of major changes might not be perfect the first time we roll them out, but there are other models in the country that we turn to, and we're, you know, mm-hmm, going to continue to look at the amounts of money and what makes sense for North Carolina.
Now, there's some other things that Democracy North Carolina has been working on, among them right to vote and instant runoff voting. And tell us,
right,
tell us about
the overall. We sort of have a two-pronged approach to improving democracy in North Carolina. So big money out on one side. So the lobbying reforms, making sure there's plenty of sunshine, plenty of disclosure. And these, then these public campaign financing options to give candidates who might not have wealth or access to wealth a chance to run. So at the same time, we work on more voters in. As you curtail the power of special interest money in politics, folks who have been disillusioned by the system and say, well, what, my vote doesn't even count. It's all run by these, the good old boy network, this, these folks who are wealthy, and it's generally overwhelmingly the donors to campaigns are white males who elect white males. Mm-hmm. So as you curtail that, the power and that, the status quo of that old money network, and then of course there are the special interest corporate interests that are weighing heavily with their money in campaigns, and are also generally, you know, the CEOs are generally white men as well. You also encourage regular folks to be a part of the system again. And Democracy North Carolina has done the research that states with high voter turnout and high civic participation enjoy other great demographic indicators, such as higher economics indicators, better education, you know, more people finishing high school, finishing college, lower infant mortality, just, you know, less income disparity. So we encourage, we need North Carolina citizens to be engaged in the process. We want them educated on, you know, the issues and on who to vote for. And we hope that, as, you know, they see the chance of maybe someone like them actually holding a seat in the General Assembly, that they will be inspired to become active.
North Carolina has historically had some very poor turnout rates.
Exactly.
And how are
we
you?
Were like in the, in 2000, we used to be in the bottom 10 states, and now I think we were in the lower 15 in 06. And of course, this primary, you know, they're saying things are going to be very, very different. So one thing that Democracy North Carolina has been working hard on is to make sure that there are adequate early voting sites. One of the exciting reforms that we won on the More Voters Inside in 2007, you know, along with those, that public financing expansion, was same-day voter registration. And this is where folks who miss the arbitrary 25-day registration deadline. So the way the law reads is you have to register 25 days prior to an election. Now folks who miss that deadline can register and vote simultaneously during the early voting period, which is during the primary, April 17th to May 3rd. So here in North Carolina, in a lot of states, they have same-day registration even on election day. And we have to continue to tell people that it's not on election day, which is May 6th for the primary. It's only up through that Saturday before the election. So in this case, May 3rd. But folks can register and vote simultaneously. So it's really an important reform for students. We have a lot of colleges in the area. students who may have intended to vote absentee in their home state or their home district, and they realize, you know, oh gosh, here's the, you know, I can't really go home because I have a test or whatever. So they can go and register and vote at the early voting sites. The Orange County Board of Elections will have the sites for Orange County. I know there's one on UNC's campus. It's in the building next to Moorhead, whose name I don't know. But it's next to as you face the Moorhead Planetarium. It's the building to the right. But the Orange County Board of Elections will have all the county early voting sites and the hours, and their number is 967-9251.
967-9251.
Correct.
Okay. Now, the same day register, actually, I'm sorry, the instant runoff voting.
Right.
That's 10 cities in 2007, right?
Had the option to use it. And the only, we did two trials, one in Hendersonville, North Carolina, and we had to find places where the boards of elections were willing to try it. But in Cary, North Carolina, we ran a successful pilot. And what it does, it allows you to rank vote, and it means that a municipality doesn't have to go back and do a primary runoff. And runoff elections can be very low turnout and expensive. You still have to have as many poll workers, even though it's, you know, might be just two people left in the race in this runoff race. Yeah. So it allows you to rank your choices 1, 2, 3. I like the idea of instant runoff voting because it allows you to vote for someone who you really know might not have enough popularity or notoriety negative
wrong
connotation
here. Popularity.
Popularity, yes. But you want them, you know, you want to express your support for this candidate.
Being a spoiler.
Right, right. And so you can vote for them without throwing your vote away, because in that case, when they don't do very well, your number two choice is your choice that really gets tallied.
Okay. That's great. And there are 10 counties that are going to be trying it in 2008. Is that right?
Well, I don't think we'll probably find 10 who are willing to try it. The law allows for that many to try it. But we probably, you know, we're just looking around for cities where it makes sense. It has to do part of the determining whether a place is a good trial for this is how many at-large versus how many ward districts for different council and commissioners and things like that.
What about Chapel Hill and Carrboro?
I don't know for sure that you said that you thought that they are trying instant runoff voting, and I do not know for sure about that.
I thought that Chapel Hill was going to. At least it had been discussed.
I know one thing that Chapel Hill is working seriously on is local public campaign financing.
Okay.
I hate to switch back to my favorite topic, but
okay.
Since it's my favorite, I guess I will. Local elections, realtors and home builders are by far the largest donors to local elections across the state and probably across the nation in those local elections. So our sense is that they're really trying to determine, you know, what kind of folks get on the council, what for development reasons, you know, development pressures. So local public financing, and it's been fought by very ardently by the State Home Builders Association, but we did finally win this option to test local public financing for Chapel Hill. So that is something that the council is working to implement. And there's a hearing, and I do not have the date of that hearing, but if you visit our website at www.democracy-nc.org, last I heard, the date wasn't set for that town council hearing in Chapel Hill, but it should be soon. And we encourage folks to show up for that and learn about local public financing and consider running if you're interested in using the program and think you can get your qualifying donations by going door to door and getting, you know, some states in Arizona, the max for if you're going to be part of the local public financing program and agree to the spending limits, your qualifying donations are a max of $5. So it's a real grassroots effort that turns, you know, returns democracy really to a grassroots level.
Now, some of the benefits of instant runoff voting. All right, it saves counties and taxpayers and candidates money. It ensures higher voter turnout, makes government more representative, what eases the burden on election officials, and
yeah, they don't have to get, you know, people are having trouble getting poll workers. I don't think it's as bad a problem in Orange County, but we do, a lot of the folks who have been poll workers for years are really aging out, and we need to encourage young folks to become poll workers. So yeah, if you have to run a runoff election and get a whole new group of poll workers back for that, it's not always easy to do, especially in some of the less populous counties. The more rural counties have real trouble, and especially also as we're trying to expand these early voting sites. You know, a lot of the folks are saying we can't, you know, we'd like to add more early voting sites, but we don't have enough poll workers. So we need, there really is, and that's another way to become civically engaged.
Become a
find
poll
out,
worker.
Yeah, find out about how elections work in your county. It's just really important stuff.
Yeah. Do you have any sense of what the turnout's likely to be? I mean, does there seem to be a whole lot more interest now?
Well, of course, for the first time in many years, North Carolina is in play in the national primary, the Democratic primary. So, yes, that we're expecting huge turnout. I don't, you know, numbers I don't think I have to predict, but it will be exciting. I think, you know, one thing that we have to stress to folks, and maybe to young people and folks who have never voted before, is learning about all these different down ballot races. Because now, of course, the judicial
explain that.
Well, if you have the president at the top and then the governor, and so maybe you've seen, you know, ad nauseum, seen ads for those two races, but, you know, do you really know who's running for lieutenant governor? Do you know who's running for treasurer? Do you know who's running for the appellate court seats? And especially those, part of the provision when we won the public campaign financing, part of the compromise or as we worked through how that law, you know, would actually read, is that those races became nonpartisan. So you don't know, looking at a ballot, who the party of those judicial candidates. So educating yourself ahead of time, some ballots will have bond issues on that. I don't know that that's the case in Chapel Hill or Carrboro, but just educating yourself about all those different state-level judges, those races we call the Council of State, you know, Commissioner
of
Interest.
Now, there's a voter guide. It goes out.
There is a judicial voter guide that is mailed to every house. And whether that is going to be available for the primary is something I'm not quite sure of. I know we'll have it ready for the general election. And that's put out by the Board of Elections, actually. I shouldn't say we'll have it ready, but we do, you know.
It is a part
of the, and, the provision. And that's paid for in part, as is... You know, the $3 checkoff on your state income tax form is how North Carolina pays for this public campaign financing program for the state-level judges. I cannot stress enough the importance of saying yes on your state income tax form to a $3 checkoff. There's a similar on your federal income tax form, and it's been on the federal form for years, but only since 2003 on the state level, the state income tax form. And only statewide, only about 10% of the people say yes to the checkoff. And it's not, in my opinion, it's not that they wouldn't support it if they knew. It's not three new dollars. It's $3 of the taxes that you're already paying and just saying, I think this system of fairness and electing people to serve on our courts is worth $3. So it's,
And again, it doesn't add to your tax. It doesn't take away from your tax refund.
Exactly.
It's just $3 out of the taxes that you're already paying are allocated to this fund.
Yeah. In my mind, it's just a vote for fairness. And, but when the fund does badly, folks in the General Assembly who are not proponents of public financing can say, well, why would I support this bill? The public obviously hates it because only 10% of the people say yes. Well, to which I say, well, you know, I don't really think that's the case. Like, you know, let's say half the people in the state really don't like the idea of public financing. Well, there's still 50% who would like it if they understood what that program was about. So it's that educational burden. And if your tax preparer doesn't ask the question about, they're required by law to ask the question.
But there's been some problems with
There have been software for electronic filers. There have been software that didn't ask the question. And, you know, we've just worked very hard every year since the beginning of the program to make sure folks know about.
Yeah, I know I've been passing out the
little $3 buck slips. Yes, we have.
Right.
We had literally 1 million of them. Maybe we're down to 900,000. But if you can, if you know of a place to distribute these little dollar-sized informational flyers, we often ask, and it's late to do this year, but we would encourage employers to send them out with the W-2s just to let
folks
know.
That's a nice idea.
And I do have several supporters who helped us in that way this year, and we'll continue to work on that. Former Governors Hunt and Holzhauser, one a Democrat and one a Republican, have some ads that are running. We got some help from the North Carolina Association of Broadcasters, actually, to run that as you know, part of their ad council, pro bono ad. So really trying to get the word out about the checkoff.
Well, what is the fund? All right. What does the money actually go to from the fund?
So the money from the public campaign fund is for the judicial races and for the voter guide.
And for the voter
the
guide.
The nonpartisan.
Okay. And
guide.
And how does it work when they, for the races, for the funding for the races?
I like to talk about the 2006 case in which, you raise $50,000 to $70,000, depending on if it's appellate or Supreme Court race, a max of $70,000, and then you get about $150,000 additional to start your race. And there is a provision in all of these public financing programs, and this is true in programs in Maine and Arizona where they've had legislative public financing since 2000. It's true in Connecticut, where they've just implemented public financing, coincidentally, on the heels of their governor going to prison.
Yes.
So
okay.
The parallels are there with our former Speaker of the House now serving time for campaign finance violations. If you are running with public funds and your opponent is not running with public funds and you're wildly outspent by or greatly outspent by your opponent who's in the private, who's being privately funded, you're eligible for rescue funds. And you can get two rounds of rescue funds. And in 2006, in the Supreme Court race, one candidate was in the program, one candidate not in the program. And the candidate in the program actually received two rounds of rescue funds. Now, what we've seen in Maine and Arizona is more and more candidates of both parties are using the program, so the need for rescue funds is less and less. But certainly, when a program first starts, you're probably not going to have as many people using it. So it's a way. And there's also now a provision for rescue funds if you are attacked, let's say, by what they call an issue ad group.
Okay.
So back in 2004, that Swift Boat, what were they called?
Swift Boat Veterans.
That is an example of one of these issue advocacy groups that, you know, attacked, if you will, John Kerry's campaign. And in this case, if that had happened to one of these candidates in the public campaign in the public campaign financing program, rescue funds would have been available, just the same as if they had been outspent directly by a candidate.
Who oversees the fund?
Board of Elections. I mean, it's collected by the Department of Revenue, and then Board of Elections is like you file your intent to be a part of the program with the Board of Elections. You turn in your qualifying contributions to the Board of Elections, and then the Board of Elections gives you the money.
Okay, and again, you said it's been pretty successful. The judicial seem to be. How many are doing
judicial
it?
Candidates? Really, really like it, and in fact, this time. There's only one candidate for all the races that for which it's available. So the Supreme Court race and some six or seven appellate court races, and then those three new council estate races. Mm-hmm. And only one. Many, many people have qualified and expressed their intent to be a part of the program. Only one person has said they're absolutely not using it. It's a candidate for superintendent of public instruction. One candidate. But beyond that,
that's pretty good.
Yeah, and we'll see. You know. Both in, as I've mentioned, in 2004 and 2006, there were candidates who wanted to be a part of the program and were unable to get their qualifying contributions, because it really does change the model. You can't take money from out of state under this program. So, you know, you have to do a little more grassroots fundraising, and that's a paradigm shift that actually makes
the candidate more in contact with the actual voters rather than raising money from big interests, instead
of just hanging out with your donors. You're listening to what your constituents actually want, and that's the beauty of the program. Democracy North Carolina doesn't promote public campaign financing just for the sake of public campaign financing. What we want to see is the policy changes related to folks' top tier issues. So whether it's, I mean, you and I have worked together on health care for all in the past. So whether it's, you know, health care for all, the environment, public education, any issue that doesn't have big money behind it stands to do better as the playing field is leveled. You know, right now, so much money flowing from banks, from utilities, from pharmaceutical and insurance companies, and all of these corporations and interests have a right to do business, and we need them to do business. I'm, you know, glad that I have car insurance, for example, and health insurance. What I don't want is those industries setting public policy. That's just a totally separate thing, and that's what we're attempting to do, is let policy issues be argued on their merit and not on who has the most money to finance the most lobbyists.
Yeah, actually, I think it's great. All right, so we've got in this coming year, what are some of the plans? We're going to have to wrap up. What are some of the plans?
Well, this is a big year for implementation on the public campaign financing program. So monitoring what's going to happen with those three council estate races, and then, of course, in 2009, gearing up for whatever we think is the next expansion, you know, what makes sense in the way of expansion. The other thing we're working on so much right now is get out the vote, and as I said, making sure there are adequate number of of the one-stop sites, to the early voting sites to take care of these new same-day registration people, and just everyone who, you know, whether they aren't changing the registration or adding the registration, if they're just voters who want to vote early to avoid lines on election day. So we're building coalitions across the state, training folks on how to do civic voter engagement and get out the vote work. We'll have groups all across the state going door to door, doing phone banking, making sure folks have what they need to be a part of our democracy.
That's really wonderful. Would you say just a quick word? I really have to wrap up, but say just a quick word about the ex-felons.
Here in North Carolina, ex-felons, once they've paid restitution, can vote. And, you know, every now and again, we get a call from out of state. And, like, for example, it seems like most of the calls I get are from Georgia. And someone who has been a convicted felon in Georgia cannot vote again. But here in North Carolina, folks can, and they often don't realize
that.
Another thing that we're trying to do is let ex-felons know that once, and we're working also with the Department of Corrections.
There are, 70,000 or something in North Carolina. That's a lot of votes.
Yeah. And, you know, there's no reason once they have paid any fines and done any time that they shouldn't have those voting rights restored.
Yeah. Molly, thank you. I just want to remind people once again to do the checkoff. Mark yes if you want to designate $3 of your already owed or paid taxes to the Special Fund for Voter Education Materials and for candidates who accept strict spending limits. It does not change your tax or your refund. Just mark yes, please. And the Democracy North Carolina website
is www.democracy-nc.org. There are opportunities to volunteer to get involved with our Get Out the Vote work, phone banking, canvassing, etc. And especially if you have folks who you know in other parts of the state who might not know about public campaign financing, send them to that website. Send them a link to the website and let them find out what we're all about, because we are working on statewide work.
Molly, Thank you for being with us.
Thanks so much, Tana. My pleasure.
I want to say just quickly that with most of our airwaves now dominated by commercial giants like AT&T and Verizon, supporting our local community radio station becomes even more important. WCOM is your listener-supported community radio station. Donate. Help. You can go to www.communityradio.coop and click on the Donate Now button. Thank you, and you've been listening to The Wilf Show on WCOM LP, Chapel Hill, and Carrboro. Thank you. And join us again.